All right, here we go. Tell me, Tyler Devitt, how do we sound this morning? Because I want to sound crystal clear. For the
crystal clear now, Mike.
Are we crystal clear now? Did we find the button that needed to be pushed to make us sound a little bit better on this Monday morning? Excellent. Tony, you did a phenomenal job. Phenomenal job.
I fix things. That's what I do.
He's a fixer. He's a fixer, ladies and gentlemen. Jags have certainly some things to fix up a little bit before the season starts. Welcome in, everybody. Happy Monday to you. Wild West Guns and Gold, Tony. I do believe, going back, I felt better about going back and watching the game again and watching Blake throw the ball again. Not quite as off the mark as I initially had the feeling of, you know, and really, once again, drops. Still not sure. Did that second Giant defender knock the ball away from Allen Hurns or not? Ball looked like he might have gotten in there pretty good, at least catchable range. Allen Robinson had a couple that he's got to help his quarterback out on.
Yeah.
One of them was pretty easy catch. The other one a little bit more difficult, but this is big boy football now. You got to catch those balls. And a lot of times when your quarterback's throwing it low and away from the play, he's trying to protect you, and you've got to help him out and pick him up and make those plays. So there were a couple of plays left on the field by the wide receivers. Certainly Blake off target on a couple, even on a couple of the ones that he connected with. So overall, I would think not quite as sharp as week one, but I didn't think it was any kind of glaring regression or anything like that.
No, look, I think it's kind of, he was so sharp the first week of the preseason. You would like to think that he's going to be that guy every week, week in and week out. He's still a young quarterback who's got some things that he's working on, obviously mechanically still, going into the regular season. But I thought he was effective. I thought his play was good enough on Saturday night. They need to find ways to finish off drives getting into the end zone. And, you know, you watch some of the other preseason games. I watched Mariota last night had a drop from McCluster in the end zone where one of his drives would have ended. But it was a good enough play where Mariota deserved to have a touchdown, right? Has Blake Bortles had one of those yet where there's been a good enough play where that deserved to be a touchdown pass? Maybe the drop by Harbor last week, certainly the drop by Hurns.
You couldn't count. Yeah, the drop by Hurns was one.
Could have led to a touchdown.
Right.
Obviously, Allen Robinson would have continued that drive, so you're not having to worry about him throwing the ball a little bit behind Robinson on the next play on third down. I think that they haven't taken full advantage of some of the opportunities they've gotten. We talked about this on the post game on Saturday. It's time for these drives to end in the end zone, and I think as good as a lot of fans feel, and I think you and I feel about where this offense is, especially compared to where it was as you went through the last month, month and a half of last season, and watching the progress of Blake Bortles, they need to put the ball in the end zone. And need to put the ball in the end zone in a way that isn't Blake Bortles on a 4th-and-4 where you'd probably kick a field goal in the regular season diving at the pylon. Like, they need some kind of success beyond that and field goals to feel really good about where they are going into the regular season against Carolina.
I think the number one thing that helps that, though, is the return of Julius Thomas.
No doubt.
I mean, clearly Julius Thomas' primary value will come in the red zone for this football team like it did with the Denver Broncos. And I think having T.J. Yeldon in there as well as another alternative in the backfield as your primary alternative is, you'll hear from Gus Bradley coming up. He talked yesterday about how he expects T.J. Yeldon to play this week extensively with the ones, possibly even a little bit with the twos, just to get him some reps. But you're going to see T.J. Yeldon get primed and readied to open the season, I believe, as the Jaguars' starting tailback on this football team. And so that's two pieces right there in Thomas and Yeldon. Now, you know, they've got to play like we expect them to play when they get in there. I didn't think the run blocking was all that great. Certainly you go back and you look at the totals, 25 carries for 60 yards, I think, was the total for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Not exactly making anybody fear for their life, but I was very impressed with the pass protection, particularly for Blake. You know, it's different when you start shuffling other guys in there, and plus when you get Henny in there, Henny just has a tendency to hang on to the football longer. I thought Blake got rid of it quickly on a number of occasions. I think he had a primary read that he went to on a three-step drop on probably at least a half dozen of his passes. But even on the ones that were a little slower developing, Tony, he only had that one missed Allen Hurns where he tried to hit him up the sideline, and he kind of had a diving attempt. It would have gone for about 10 or 15-yard gain, something like that. Had he, you know, it was a tough play to make. That's the only one I think he was forced to leave his comfort zone in the pocket, so that's a pretty good sign.
Yeah, and I know he talked about he thought he held the ball for a half second too long on the play to Denard Robinson in the end zone. He thinks if he had thrown it on time that that play would have been a touchdown, and maybe it would. You know, I know the defender was in pretty good position on that play, but we'll see, you know, what it would have. It would have been nice to see what it looked like if that ball does get out on time, and Blake feels good about that kind of throw. But yeah, you didn't see him having to move off his spot a whole lot. You saw a little bit of that last week when they were playing Pittsburgh, but he was effective doing that last week as well. Look, he's an athletic guy, and I certainly think he has the ability when he needs to move in the pocket. And one of the things you've seen him develop this season compared to where he was again at the end of last year is he's moving to throw. And I think like the third down and 14 play last week against Pittsburgh, that's a play where last year I think Blake takes off, where everything flushes around him. He has to step to his left and forward in the pocket, and he's like, all right, let me just get what I can get. Hopefully we're in field goal range, and then we'll try to, you know, we'll get him next time. On Friday in the preseason, he said, nope, I'm going to step up in this pocket. I'm going to let Allen Robinson sit down on his own, and I'm going to make a throw. And I think that is really good progress for a young quarterback who's still learning a lot about what it means to play quarterback in this league.
We'll hear a lot from Gus Bradley coming up. Gus had a conference call yesterday to get with the media and talk about a number of things, including the play of the offensive line, what to do with Yeldon from here on out. Looks like we'll have Yeldon, Chris Clements, and James Sample all on the field as the Jaguars take on the Detroit Lions this upcoming Friday. If you'd like to get in today, 641-1010 is the way to do it. John Osier, senior writer from Jaguars.com, is going to stop by, give us his take on the game from up close and personal at the Met on Saturday night. And we'll take your calls and all that stuff. And as we will do on most Mondays following a game, we'll ask you for your biggest positive and negative. That's your question of the day. What do you take away? Last week was a little bit easier, and we had to eliminate some of the obvious ones. Certainly, injuries, another negative again, but when you had it to Julius Thomas in week one and Jonathan Cyprian in week one, that kind of stood out, and you had Blake Bortles looking ultra sharp, so we took those things off the table. Today it's open to you. Whatever you think, biggest positive, biggest negative coming out of Saturday's second preseason game for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Share your thoughts with us on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler as well. 641-1010, the call-in number, as well as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday. We're just getting started looking back. Jags fall. Doesn't matter what the final score is, but how do they play? That's what we'll be evaluating today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Everbank. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Shotgun for Bortles. Straight drop. Blake looking. Fires it. That is caught. Allen Robinson with room in the Giants territory inside the 40-yard line. Knocked out of bounds inside the 30-yard line, but that is a terrific pitch and catch. Bortles to Allen Robinson all the way down to the Giants, 26-yard line.
I'll tell you what, Oh knows, we didn't have any touchdown highlights to play on his way in today, Tony.
Dang it.
So we gave him a 36-yard reception, catch and run.
That was a pretty nice play.
It was a very nice play.
Boy, you know, the intro really does sound like he's saying, oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Here he is again.
Which I'm fine with.
Yes. I mean,
it has a stunning appropriateness.
Little double entendre.
Yeah, it really does.
Just the way we planned it. How was the trip to New York, New Jersey?
Good. Hung out a little bit with Blue and Frangie.
Oh, dear.
And the Big Apple, and it went, I thought I lost my credit card for a little while. So I was in the tank for about 10 minutes. And
that was going to be your excuse to your wife, honey.
And then after,
I thought I lost it. I don't know how these odd charges got on my card.
And then after you're randomly blaming others, I found it in my wallet.
Oh, so excellent. Maybe look there next time.
Yeah,
did exactly you see? Right. Now, I heard Frank mention you guys were in Times Square on Friday night.
Yes.
Did you see the woman that I saw earlier this summer when I was in Times Square with basically no clothing on from the waist up but painted gold?
Missed her. Probably would have noticed.
Did you?
Really? Yeah, probably would have.
Because, I mean, I'm not even talking like when you see the SI swimsuit issue and you see the body paint, it looks like they're wearing bathing suits, right?
Right.
This was just a woman who looked like she had spray painted herself gold and was, you know, charging like $5 to take a photo with her.
Yeah.
And doing quite well, I might add.
Is that a thing? Can you do that?
I guess you can.
Wonder if I could pull that off and at the landing.
Could you?
Yeah. <sir.
laughs> I'm thinking, just spray paint yourself gold.
Right.
$5.
You know, just tweet it out. We out you.
Side gig.
So, all right. going back watching it the second time around, I thought Blake, my initial reaction was, you know, some good, some bad. Really, even on some of the completions, a little bit off, particularly that one to Rashad Green we've all remarked on where, you know, you had to do the little pirouette to catch the ball. But going back, I thought he was more on target than I thought he was, had a couple of drops. Do you think the defender got a hand on the ball to Allen Hurns down the field? Where he went over the top of the one Giants defender, Allen Hurns had it around inside the five-yard line, and I couldn't quite tell. I thought initially, and the guys were saying on the broadcast, they thought the guy got a finger in at the last second and kind of knocked it out of there. I'm telling you, I've watched a replay a thousand times. I cannot tell.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. I can tell you that anybody, and I'm sure Jerry Sullivan would tell you this, it's okay for the receivers to go get a tough catch. You know, so when Rashad Green sort of made the tough catch you're talking about, when he was behind him, it's not going to be right in your gut every time.
Right.
So, you know, those aren't necessarily bad throws, although Gus did say after the game, at the same time, some of the drops could also be better passes. So it's still everything. But I think the big picture I took away from Blake, from the offensive line, which I heard you guys talking about, if there was anything that we were all talking about all offseason, it was the offensive line and Bortles. Those were the big picture foundation pieces that had to improve. And you just get a feeling after two games. I admit, I went into the game on Saturday night really wanting to see if the offensive line could do it again, to where if after their stint you sort of looked at each other in the press box and went, all right, there it was again. Mm-hmm. You know, no disaster, no, boy, I just don't know how this is going to function. And for a second week in a row, you didn't see it. All the drops, all the lack of pass rush, everything else, that element was what made you feel last year, how is this team ever going to score? You know, there was always that feeling of how are they going to get out of their own way? Well, that seems to not be that way anymore. And if that's the case, then you can start moving forward. You can start doing things offensively. You can start controlling the clock a little bit, and you feel like you're in control of the game a little bit. So that's my big takeaway so far from two games. If that unit's better, then the foundation can start going forward.
And help is coming on that side of the football. I mean, TJ Yeldon this week, and then you get Julius Thomas back, and hopefully Marquise Lee at some point.
And the run game gets interesting because, you know, they haven't been lighting it up in the run, but with Gerhardt behind Alo-Alo able to pick up those short yardage on third and three, even early in the game, I don't have the exact stat in front of me, but Denard Robinson on a couple of runs, second and six, second and five you were looking at. Maybe second and six was, it was twice. Well, last year those were second and nine after the first down run. So even though it's not a huge run, it's, oh, we got yards.
Keeps you on schedule, as the NFL saying goes.
Right. Oh, okay, now we can go second and six.
We can run,
I think there was one where they backed that up with another four-yard run. Well, Gus has said several times after that game and then yesterday on the conference call, there's a little bit of a, we want to establish this going on. And so far, they've been able to establish that to where you're not sitting here on the 2 days after the two games going, they can't run the ball. So it's preseason, but we're seeing those things that Gus talked about all offseason. And with the run game, you're seeing it. And they haven't had Yeldon in there yet. And Yeldon's the guy who, what looks like a four-yard run, seems to have that ability to turn a couple of those four-yard runs into eight-yard runs. And then you've got something going with a drive that's based on the running game.
Yeah, it feels like they're going to be able to run the ball a little bit this year, which is good for everybody on that offense.
4 years since you felt that.
Yeah,
it's
been a while.
You know, I don't know if it's Doug Marrone, I don't know if it's the mature, but it feels like the offensive line. I expected to be saying after two games, I expected to be seeing a couple of drives each game that were good, a couple where you had some disaster because communication's so key up there. Well, so far, you haven't had that feeling of needing to say, well, it takes time for these guys to gel. Now, we still haven't. I'm sure there's stuff these defenses will do in the regular season they haven't done in preseason. So there's still game planning. There's still those things. But you feel like they're stabilizing up front And that was something, you know, you just had to see it coming out or there was going to be no confidence in this offense going forward.
No doubt. And I think we talked about this a lot during the offseason, obviously. But for me, I had a lot more questions about what the defense was going to look like than the offense. I thought the additions that they had on the offensive line were going to turn out pretty good for this football team. And I think you're seeing that early on in the preseason. I believe that Blake Bortles is going to be an effective player in this league. I like Allen Robinson. I like Julius Thomas. I think they're going to be okay on the offensive side of the ball. My questions were all on defense. And honestly, through 2 weeks of the preseason, my questions remain mainly on the defensive side of the ball, especially about where in the world pass rush is going to come for this team.
Well, it's sort of a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it's not shocking that they're not putting early pressure on the quarterback. They had 45 sacks last year, and 16 and a half came from Clemens and Marks. So you're missing, what, almost a third of your pass rush? I wasn't very good at math, Mike, but I think it's a third.
That sounds about right. 16 out of 48.
So you're missing a third of the pass rush. And
it would be a third.
So it makes sense that you'd struggle there. On the other hand, you don't know how soon Cinderic is going to be Cinderic, and we haven't seen anything from Clemens. So the other side of the sword is, okay, we haven't seen it. When are we going to see it? It's a huge issue.
And
right
what
now
will we get when we see it? As Tony's been saying,
right,
you know, what do you expect reasonably from Cinderic Marks? You can't right really expect much in the first month of the season, I don't think, even if he plays some.
Right.
And there's no telling if he will
sure
at this point.
And no. I think the key, the way Gus seems to be thinking, and he said this after the game on Saturday, they feel like in obvious passing situations on third down, if they can get him to third and eight, they feel like with blitz packages, they feel like they'll be able to create pressure where the quarterback is not just standing back there throwing on third down. The concern is, and where this team was good last year, was getting pressure in base packages. They were behind so much last year that the fact they had 45 sacks means they were able to rush when they didn't expect the quarterback to be passing necessarily. Well, that's what they haven't gotten so far. And Gus said after the game, we need to start creating pressure out of base. I'm paraphrasing there, but that's essentially then without your front four full strength, that's been the issue so far. So does that get better? Do they figure out ways for Scooter to get pressure? You know, that's certainly something that if they play early in the season the way they have so far, it's going to be an issue.
Coming out of the game, if that had been a regular season game, the thing that would have worried me was they sent more than the base in the first half several times and still didn't get home. You know, it didn't look like much of a difference between sending the four down linemen and sending an extra rusher or two in there.
I didn't have too much of a chance to look at this. I wound up writing a few stories yesterday, so I didn't have a chance to really watch the game. But Gus's point yesterday was that the Giants get the ball out very, very quickly, and that's why they had the hands up some.
Which they did a really good job, knocked out at least four passes.
It felt, watching it, like they had a lot of time to stand back there. Now, sometimes what you see watching it, when you actually go back the way they look at the tape, oh, okay, they were trying to do this, they weren't going to be able to get the pressure. But regardless, no sacks in the first couple of games, and so many times where the quarterback seems to be standing there, they know they have to get more pressure out of the base packages.
All right, let's go to the phones and get a call or two on what we have. John Osier here with us, the senior writer from Jaguars.com. And, Mike, you're going to lead us off this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, what's up, Mike? How you doing?
What's up?
Hey, a few takeaways from what I saw. I saw a second-year quarterback look pretty dang poised in the pocket. He's getting time. He's getting protected. And I also saw a two-time Super Bowl champion look like crap. I said I got his stats here. He went 8 of 16 for 98 yards. I believe there's two drops, so he would have went 10 of 16 for over 100 yards and possible a touchdown. Takeaways, I'm pretty confident in this offense. We're moving the ball. We're not stalling. We're getting good first-down runs. Philip Gerhardt looks like a bust. And, you know, it's just, I'm really looking forward to what we got. We got Julius Thomas coming back. We got TJ Yeldon going to be in the mix this Friday. I'm feeling pretty confident about this team. I mean, there's a few negatives on board, but, I mean, give the guy a break. Second-year quarterback, he's getting time in the pocket. He's making plays.
All right, Mike, we appreciate the call. I don't know if he's saying give him a break just in a general sense, because I don't think anybody here is doing anything that needs a break from.
If you feel good about anything, it's Blake Bortles and what's happened on offense.
And I think the fact, a couple of things, isn't it interesting to be hearing people now use the word bust with Gerhardt? I thought he said bust at first, because it was only 3 months ago people were talking about him being a bust. So, I mean, it is funny how that perception can change, and Toby certainly looks like he's fitting into that role that they wanted to fit into. But with Blake, I said all last week, I didn't really care if you came out and saw Blake light it up for more yards or more touchdowns than he had in the first game or whatever, but you wanted to see him look like he did in the opener again. Didn't have to be spectacular, but I think once again he showed the things that you wanted to see in the opener in the second game. So it started after that game the other night to feel like, okay, his poise, the way he's throwing, him making good decisions, is something that you can count on. Not going to be every time, but you're seeing the progression that you wanted to see, and all the other storylines, all the other things, all the details we're looking at are fine. That's the big picture for the organization.
All right, a couple of texts just came in the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, and the subject that I was going to bring up following that call from Mike. Two-time Super Bowl champion looked like crap. He did. Eli Manning, 4 out of 14 passing. And had he not, I think he could have hurt him. If they had somebody
out there. First play might have been a touchdown.
First play
of the game might have been
Beckham
a touchdown.
Odell Beckham was gone.
Yeah.
And second play, he got behind Demetrius McCray.
Yeah, I think
as well.
I looked at it. He had 5 targets to Beckham in the game. And look, Victor Cruz and Ruben Randall weren't playing. So that was what they had on the field as far as their passing game for the regular season was Eli and Beckham. He targeted him 5 times. I can't remember Beckham ever being covered. He never caught a ball.
No, he had the drop.
Right, but I can't remember him ever being covered.
No, ever being right covered where you felt like
the
defender made the better play there. It was more on Eli. So, still, to me, a little bit of a concern. I'm going to be watching that first-team offense go up against Detroit, which is pretty loaded in their own right.
And in this league, generally speaking,
or defense, excuse me,
you've got to get pressure in order for the defensive backs to do their job. I mean, if you're not getting pressure, it's tough to cover guys all over the field.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you, but the end result is whether it's due directly to the lack of pressure or these guys need to be covering a little tighter, a little bit longer, even without the pressure. I'm not sure where that falls, but the end result's the same. I'm not blaming Demetrius McCray. I'm just saying this is what's existed. We've seen guys get open deep down the field, and maybe it is because they've had a little bit more time. And clearly, the Giants, who struggled mightily in their first preseason game, 4 drives with the first-team offense, didn't even net total of 40 yards. They came out and said, let's make ourselves feel better. Look what Ben did against his team. Let's go down the field, try to get ourselves off on the right foot, hit one big play, and all of a sudden it'll all wash away. And they felt like the Jags, I think, were susceptible to that, and they took a couple of shots, and Eli was just putrid on Saturday night. So what? Any injury update, by the way, on Demetrius McCray and Leroy Reynolds in particular?
Just what we heard yesterday from Gus, which is that they'll be monitored. McCray, it was a knee contusion. That doesn't sound like it's very long term. Reynolds is an MCL. I believe it's an MRI early this week. We'll see.
Hope for the best.
The one that's too bad, obviously, is Ben, who had looked very, very good at a wide receiver. And I think he was certainly going to make the team and maybe have as big a role as he's had in an offense in a while. Broken collarbone, from what Gus said yesterday, haven't discussed the IR situation yet because they just really didn't have to yet. But it, as Gus said, I wouldn't count on him for a while.
And one area they will miss him, as Gus has pointed out that they were really excited about him, is in the running game. Because in those two tight end short yardage sets, he is the wide receiver on the field because he's the most physical of that entire group. And with the exception of Allen Robinson, who's just a big all-around guy, Ben kind of stood out physically when you saw them on the practice field.
Yeah, and on the wide receiver issue, very interesting story to watch in the last week or so, I think. Rashad Green, who really hadn't done very much early in training camp, I didn't think, on the field as a receiver. Gus said last week they rested him early. He's had an Achilles thing that they think sort of slowed him down. you know, didn't keep him out of practice, but he was a little slower than they expected. All of a sudden, they gave him a little rest, and he looked very fast last week. Had the one nice play early, I thought, where he turned a short pass into a first down. You wonder if maybe that's coming on, and it gives you one more little weapon in the passing game once Julius Thomas gets back.
They need another weapon in the wide receiver core right now. Yeah. I mean, Allen Hurns is getting open. He's got to hang on to the football consistently, but Robinson looks like the one potential difference maker that you have right now at this moment.
Yeah, no doubt.
You can't count on Marquise
Green
Lee
and Marquise Lee sort of become the wild cards. When you look at an offense, okay, what's going to be different? Well, maybe those guys come back and something out of somebody that we're not talking about yet.
All right, now he is John Osier. We call it the Oh No's segment, or the Oh No, Here Comes John segment here on the program. You can check him out daily, of course, at Jaguars.com as a senior writer. What do you have coming up today?
Practice at 11:30, and then Gus talking later on. We'll have open locker room, and it'll be a day where you sort of get with the guys who were talked about by the coach yesterday. T.J. Yeldon looks like he's going to play a lot this week. I'm sure it'll be a major storyline.
And the center battle could still go 50-50 with the first-team offense, right?
Yeah, and it sounds like it's going to go 50-50. Might both of them play this week. And I think the interesting thing is I didn't see much of a difference the other night in the first-team offense as when Buenco played on and Iwasniewski played the other night. So it seems like they've got a couple of guys who can both play pretty well, and the line functions with both of them. That's better than the alternative where you can't find a guy.
Absolutely.
So, you know, but we'll see.
Two good guys running for,
yeah. Yeah, which hasn't always been the case.
Right.
So that's kind of neat.
All right, there he goes, John Osier. Well, he's got a good one. Every Monday he pops in with us on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday because he just cannot get enough. Good to see you, Johnny.
All right, buddy. Thanks,
there
guys.
There he goes. All right, coming back, we'll see if we can squeeze in a phone call or two. We want to hear from Gus Bradley coming up as well. So we will do that. 641-1010 is the phone number. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, let's welcome in the newest Jacksonville Jaguar, Tony. Not on the program, but just in a general sense. Jag signed first-year wide receiver Eric Laura, the Eastern Illinois product, to the active roster to make room. The Jaguars waived with an injury wide receiver Damian Copeland. I think a dislocated shoulder, right?
Yeah.
Shoulder injury for sure. So Copeland on the outs, Laura on the ins, at least for now. Brian Walters had a nice night the other night.
He did.
Catching the ball.
It's interesting now looking at that wide receiver group because, look, we felt like we knew that group of guys that was going to be on the team, and there was that one spot that was kind of open, right? At the bottom of the depth chart, and if they decided to keep six somehow, right? Well, Ben was one of those guys, you know? And how are they going to handle that situation with his collarbone? Is he going to go on the PUP list? Is he going to be IR'd? Is he going to be wait? What's going to happen? Whatever happens, at least temporarily, they're going to have an extra roster spot to play with that we didn't think they had 4 days ago. Where's that going to go?
Right. Tony Washington had a drop in the game. Made a nice special teams tackle on punt coverage. And those kind of guys are going to have to contribute in some form or fashion.
And does it mean that they keep Bernard Pierce and Grant early on in the season instead of having to make the decision on which one of those guys
to keep?
They might
have done it anyway.
Right.
Quite frankly, a lot of teams do keep five running backs when you roll fullbacks and tailbacks into the equation. A lot of times you get one fullback, four tailbacks. Well, if you don't have a fullback and your fullback is a 300-pound defensive lineman, I so want to see Tyson Alualu score a touchdown this year. You know it. You know it's coming, right? Because he's been pretty effective helping to move the pile on these third and ones.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a nice thing to have. You feel pretty confident that you're going to get some push with him in the game. And you put that on tape enough times, and people will be, you know, gearing up for a way to fire off on Toby Gerhart back there if he, in fact, is your short yardage back. It'd be interesting to see if they use T.J. Yeldon in that role or not when he comes in. I think they'll try him on Friday in a variety of roles.
Sure.
Test him extensively.
I mean, it certainly feels like, at least for the first 2 weeks of the preseason, they that's kind of the niche that they have for Toby Gerhardt right now. And it makes sense. Look, you watch the way that he's run the ball in that short yard situation. It would take a pretty special effort from T.J. Yeldon to overtake him in that kind of role.
He's been strong. He's been
running through guys. The first guy's not making the tackle on Toby Gerhardt. He's turned 2 yard runs into 6 and 7 yard runs at times here in the preseason. And that's, you know, that's not about scheming on defense. That's man on man, hat on hat. The Jaguars have been winning those battles here early on in the preseason, and Toby Gerhardt more than most in that situation.
All right, let's get to Gus Bradley. Yesterday did some of his talking on a conference call yesterday, so you know, that's why the audio is going to sound like it does, like he's on the phone, because he was. And Gus Bradley, his opening statement, a lengthy one, but he covers a variety of issues coming out of the second preseason game for the Jaguars, so let's give a listen.
I thought... you know, coming out offensively, we did some good things. When you look at it, you know, as far as scoring on the opening drives, we anticipated going the whole first half with the first offense, that, or 30 to 35 plays. The 30 plays came rather quickly. That's why you saw them play a quarter and then maybe a little bit in the second quarter. But they had 30 plays, and that was with three drives, so averaging 10 plays a drive, and scored on all three. You know, so that was good. We talked about starting fast and finishing faster. It's been our talk this whole training camp, so that part was good to see. I think we ran the ball in critical times as well. You know, in the first half or the first quarter, when we needed it, we had to get it in those third downs. So, you know, very good things. I think, you know, we got to look at our penalties. Still, we had, I think, what, 5 penalties, but, you know, those 3 scores, those 3 field goals that we had, and, you know, some penalties in the red zone specifically, I think, kept us from getting in the end zone. So some things we just need to address there. Defensively, tale of two halves, really. First half, did some really good things. I think they were 10 for 31 in passing. You know, had a sudden change. We had them 3 and out. First half, they averaged, what, under 3.5 yards per rush. 131 total yards in the first half, I think. Like 50 of those came in the 2 minute, 1 explosive play in the first half. So some things that, you know, it just felt better than it did last week. You know, all good things. Second half, we had some communication issues, some missed opportunity issues that we need to get corrected. I know when you look at one stat I'll bring up to you, I think that you look at second down productivity or first down productivity, and second and 7+, in the game, we were the defense had their offense in that situation 19 times compared to 9 times in second 1-6. So it was a good sign. We're getting them in the long yardage and second down. That's always more beneficial for us as a team. And then special teams. You know, the return game is something that we put a lot of emphasis on. I think, you know, Rashad is doing a much better job. I know he had that one muff. But you can feel the team is gaining confidence in him. And he had 1 6-yard returner. I think the one he muffed, he felt like he could have had a lot of yards on that one. And, you know, so, you know, we got to get that corrected. But feel better about him. And then the kickoff return, D-Rob didn't have the return, but Corey Grant had 2, a 42 and a 35-yarder. Pretty pleased with his progress there.
Clearly, Rashad Green looks like the punt returner. And
yep.
Corey Grant really helped himself a lot, I thought, on Saturday night. No question about that. It's a great statistic how many times they had the Giants in second and 7 or longer, right? But again, if you had a quarterback who was really on the other night, wonder what the final tally would have been, you know,
sure,
going against Jags' first team defense. So you get Stafford coming in here with Calvin Johnson, Golden Tate, Eric Ebron at tight end, didn't have a big rookie year, but they're expecting big things this year. Amir Abdullah has played well for them coming out of the backfield. Joik Bell's still hurt, but they've got a lot of good pieces healthy on the offensive side. It's going to be a good test, and you want it to be a good test in that final tune-up game.
You do, and look, talking about Eli Manning and what the Giants did on offense, at least with their starters a little bit, there's going to be times in the regular season when the opposing team just isn't clicking, right? Well, when they're doing that, field goals need to turn into touchdowns on your side and really put pressure on them, as opposed to it being 6-0 when you put together 2 really good drives on that team and they're completely stalling on the offensive side of the ball. If it's 14-0, Now there's a lot of pressure on that team, and that's why when we talk about how important it is for this team to find some way to finish off these drives, when they get into the season and have an opportunity to put a team like the Giants, if they do play someone that's playing that poorly on offense, they need to get more points than six out of those two drives.
Yeah, you want the other team to look up and say, man, we dug ourselves a 14-point hole here.
Right.
Because you felt like the Jags looked like they were executing a lot more crisply, a lot more sharply on Saturday night.
And in the NFL, you don't lull for 60 minutes very often on the offensive side of the ball. You would feel like eventually there's things that are available to the Giants that eventually in that game they would expose. You know, Eli's going to hit a couple of those at some point in time in the game, and then you're looking up and it's now you're down 10-6, and you're like, well, what happened?
Right.
Well,
how do we get behind? And we've been dominating this football game, at least statistically, up to that point. All right, more from Gus coming up a little bit later on. We've got this date in football history and the drive around the NFL. Your calls welcome at 641-1010, and they've been coming in fast and furious on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. We'll get to some more of those as well on a Reaction Monday. We're always brought to you on Monday by Wild West Guns and Gold, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories. Right now, get a free scope mounting with a rifle or scope purchase at Wild West Guns and Gold. Everything from revolvers to shotguns to sporting arms and everything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA. Guaranteed. You can even trade your gold for guns. Go to guns4jax.com. That's guns, the number 4, JAX.com, or visit Wild West on South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777. Again, free scope mounting with a rifle or scope purchase right now. Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Back with this date in football history and the drive around the NFL on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. No big milestones on this date, Tony, although the NFL's most famous atheist was born on this date 29 years ago. Arian Foster coming out recently and saying, that's right, I'm an atheist. What you going to do about it? Right? 29 years old, four-time Pro Bowler, and one-time first-team All-Pro. But most significantly, happy 22nd to AR-15. Allen Robinson, ladies and gentlemen. Your guy, 22. We remarked last week, right, about Mike Evans is turning 22. Well, Allen Robinson just as young, and hopefully for the Jags, he will join Jimmy Smith and Keenan McCardell one day as one of the greatest Jaguar wide receivers, and he's got the potential. You see it all there in that run and catch the other night. Got to hang on to the football when it hits him in the hands as well. It's a little bit of a disease going around in the preseason right now with the Jacksonville Jaguars, but I think big numbers for Allen Robinson this year, Tony. If he stays healthy, that is a major concern, because right now he looks irreplaceable to me on the Jaguar offense.
No, I totally agree with you. And for a Jaguars offense that, look, we've been talking about them, they're putting points on the board. We want to see him in some of those drives and touchdowns. When the easy play is there to be made, it needs to be made by these guys. And that's anybody where the ball is hitting your hands, make the play. And every now and then, by the way, it's the NFL. You're allowed to go make the tough one, too.
Yes, you can do that. All right, whether you need a roof for your home or your place of business, re-roof repairs, Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, bringing you the state in football history, license number CCC056797 for Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. That was this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Green Bay Packers wide receiver Jordy Nelson could be out for the year after suffering a knee injury during their preseason game against Pittsburgh yesterday. There were reports after the game that it is a torn ACL. Nelson is getting an MRI today to find out what the injury is. Also in the same game, Pittsburgh Steelers center Marquise Pouncey had his leg rolled up on, and according to head coach Mike Tomlin, has a broken ankle that will require surgery. The team has not set a timetable yet for his return. The Houston Texans have named Brian Hoyer as their starting quarterback. Hoyer signed with Houston this offseason. He beat out Ryan Mallett for the job here in the preseason. The New England Patriots worked out veteran wide receiver Reggie Wayne yesterday. They're expected to have a decision tomorrow on whether or not they will sign him. Reggie Wayne also could possibly go visit the Green Bay Packers again in the aftermath of what's going to happen with Jordy Nelson up there. And there's one more game to play in week two of the NFL preseason tonight. Cincinnati will be in Tampa, where the number one overall pick, Jameis Winston, will make his home debut. in front of those Buccaneers fans.
Yes, of course, another story that made the rounds yesterday. I'd read most of the long piece Chris Borland gave an interview to ESPN, the magazine, and it was on ESPN.com. I don't even know if the magazine issue is out yet that the interview is going to be in. But Chris Borland was the guy who was a rookie linebacker for the 49ers last year, taken in the third round, had a very productive rookie season, and then up and retired this offseason, as the way he put it in a nutshell, as a preventative measure to avoid head trauma.
Yeah.
And that, you know, he was worried that he would not be able to enjoy his family life and his children fully if he played a long career in the National Football League. And he had an excellent rookie season. Tony, he's a guy, he has estimated that he's had 30 concussions playing football. Okay. Don't know if he's atypical either. He's a linebacker. Those guys are getting hit all the time. They're delivering blows. Your brain doesn't really know the difference much between getting hit and delivering the hit. And so anyway, he said one of the things that bothered him the most was a former player at the NFL Symposium last year who suggested that players who want to run with a posse and stay, you know, on the wrong side of the law at times find themselves a fall guy to take the blame. In other words, when they pull you over and there's a gun or drugs or whatever in the car and you're doing something wrong, hey, this is the guy that knows. He raises his hand. It's all on me. You know you're going to bail him out. Well, that guy that the ESPN story referenced was an employee of the ESPN's named Chris Carter, who we all know who Chris Carter is.
Mm-hmm.
And
who was giving that speech to the players in a Hall of Fame jacket.
Yes, he was wearing his Hall of Fame jacket up there on stage with notable turd Warren Sapp. This is even before Warren Sapp got arrested for the prostitution deal out in Phoenix during the Super Bowl this year. Warren Sapp's had a reputation of being one of the biggest turds out there. Now, people will say, what is Chris Carter doing talking to these guys? I understand the idea of you've got a guy, publicly it seems like a great redemption story, right? Had a drinking problem early in his career. Buddy Ryan cut him with the Philadelphia Eagles and ultimately was able to latch on with the Minnesota Vikings as kind of a last chance opportunity. Turned his life around, became a Hall of Famer. And to get up there and give a talk about, hey, avoid these same pitfalls, I thought I was invincible. There are many reasons why I would want to hear from Chris Carter in that circumstance. Makes a lot of sense to me. This is not what they expected to hear. Roll the tape.
So anytime you see one of them blogs come up, Allen Iverson driving 93 miles an hour at 2 a.m. in the morning with a gun underneath the seat, 3 of the 5 are going to show up. Just check it. If you don't think I know what I'm talking about, check it for me. Because y'all internet babies now. I don't Google where you ask questions. Warren and Chris is where you get answers.
And just in case y'all not going to decide to do the right thing, if y'all got a crew, you got to have a fall guy in the crew. Now, I let my homeboys know. Y'all want to keep rolling like this? Then I need to know who's going to be the fall guy, who's going to be driving, because y'all not going to all do the right stuff now, all right? So I got to teach y'all how to get around all this stuff, too. If you're going to have a crew, one of them fools got to know he going to jail. We'll get him out.
We'll get him out.
Make sure they understand, can't nothing happen to you. Your name can't be in lights under no circumstances.
You're above the law. Get some guy whose life doesn't matter as much to take the fall for you. I honestly think Sapp at first thought he was joking. I almost thought he laughed uncomfortably at first. That was Warren Sapp's voice you heard initially.
Sure, and look, when I read the headlines, I was like, that had to be, like, the context of that has to be different than what I'm
There's
seeing.
There's even more to it. He went on and on. He brought Teddy Bridgewater up, and he's like, Teddy, you got a guy who'll take the fall for you, right? And I don't think Teddy knew what to say. He's like, uh-huh. You know, just like, all right, Teddy, go back and sit down now.
Right.
Not, here's, when I'm rolling with a crew who I know is going to do wrong, I don't stop rolling with that crew. I just tell him, look, who's the fall guy? Who's taking the rap? And then he turns to the players, he says, and I know all of you aren't going to do the right thing. So when you're planning on not doing the right thing, make sure you have a fall guy to take the rap for you.
Yeah, you guys are knuckleheads.
We all understand you're gonna violate the law. You're gonna have guns. You're gonna have inappropriate moments. So just make sure there's somebody there to take the blame, because it can't come down on you, right? Now, that may be some calculated real-world advice that for some people is probably actually helpful. I don't know if that's the official party line you want the National Football League putting out there.
No, and the fact that it was on their website for a year, basically.
And after a guy from, I think it was the NFLPA, came up and questioned Chris Carter about the content of it. And Chris Carter says now, watching the video, only yesterday did he realize how wrong he was, and now he's sorry about it. So I guess he didn't realize how wrong he was when someone questioned him immediately afterwards and said, wait a minute, did you really suggest not necessarily doing the right thing, but if you're going to continue to do the wrong thing, get somebody to just take the fall for you?
Warning Chris is where you get answers.
Yeah, it's weird because this feels like, okay, if Chris Carter's the 8th, 9th, 10th year receiver in that locker room in Minnesota, right? And young guys come along, like a Randy Moss, something like that. And you can tell that Randy's a little bit of trouble. He's not going to calm down his lifestyle. He's going to be who he's going to be. And if you're his teammate and you want to make sure he's on the field all the time, you're kind of bringing him under your wing, right? And you're saying in private to Randy Moss, it's like, look, you're going to go out and do what you're going to do. Just make sure you got somebody that
right,
knows.
Right, these four knuckleheads I see you rolling with all the time.
Right.
It's that guy who's going away.
Sounds like advice that he's probably given to other guys in the past, right? And if it's just between him and Randy Moss, I don't know that we never find out about it. It's that you would go up in front of the rookie class of 2014 and say, this is what you should do, but all you guys are idiots, so here's what you need to do to keep yourself out of trouble. Just have somebody who knows when the gun gets found in your car that it's his gun.
Right, it's not your gun. You don't know anything about it. Play dumb.
Right, it's this conversation that feels like gets had behind closed doors in the NFL. It's not something that gets said in public, and there's a reason for it, because you're watching the reaction to it right now.
Well, and here's the thing. Maybe, like you said, one-on-one, you know this guy, you've seen this guy, and you realize this guy's going to be trouble. He can help us on the field, and we're not getting through to him. To go to what I still believe is an impressionable group of young men.
Yeah.
21, 22 years old, what have you. You're a Hall of Famer. A couple of them standing up there and say, hey, come on. It's not about doing the right thing. It's about making sure you cover it up.
Yep.
I mean, that, and then for the NFL to slap that up on the NFL.com website and leave it there for a year until they get called on. Now the NFL says, we don't condone it. Do you listen to what you post on your own website? Ever? And somebody obviously had to say, that's not so bad. We got to let this one go through. Let's go to the phones here, 641-1010, and welcome Will to Jaguars today. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Good. What's up?
First off, love the show. You guys are kind of taking it and running with it like the rest of the media. When I say that, the guy was on there for an hour. They took the last little 3 minutes. He was being, I watched the whole thing. This is old. He was on there. That was the end of his speech. He was saying, you need to do good. You need to da-da-da. Don't put things on social media. He was doing all the right things. And then at the end, he said, it was more, don't take it word for word, but he was more like, now for you knuckleheads, that just ain't going to do good anyway. And I was being to that. That was not, he was being honest. And like you guys say, that may be the conversation between you guys one-on-one. But he was just saying, some of you guys just aren't going to do right. So for you ones that aren't going to do right, and you got your little crew with you, and your parents spending all your money and trying to have this big entourage, you need to have your fall guy back. That's how it was said. He was not encouraging no one to do it, but he said, but if you're hard-headed and you're one of those ones, then your name don't need to be in the spotlight at all because you represent your team. So in doing that, and you got your little entourage, well, what you need to do is have your fall guy. And then I'm going to end on this. And at the end of it, he was actually playing and saying, but we all know you guys aren't going to go out. We all know you guys aren't going to drink. We all know you guys just read the Bible. He was just playing. He was really being funny at the end.
But right, no, he was being facetious. Like, obviously, you're not all going to read the Bible and you're not all going to do the right thing. And instead, but I'm disagreeing with you wholeheartedly here. Imagine this was a school assembly. Right? And you're talking to, let's say it's a graduation ceremony, and you're telling these kids, well, go out there, change the world, do all the right things. Now, for the ones who are inclined not to, and maybe you're going to commit crimes and do wrong things, just find someone else to take the blame for you. I mean, I don't understand how you think that's acceptable, even if it's at the end of a long speech where he says, do the right things, but if you're not going to do the right things, find somebody else to take the fall for you. That, it, it put it that way. This, that may be a point of view that keeps those people out of trouble. Is that the point of view that the administration would like the commencement speaker to be imparting to these?
No. You know, look, again, I think it's Chris Carter shouldn't say what he said. Right? He shouldn't say what he said, but I think it's a thought in NFL circles. What he said is a reality in the National Football League that doesn't get talked about a lot and certainly shouldn't be talked about in public at a rookie symposium. Right? It's just, you don't say it.
Your public position as a league shouldn't be, oh, if you're going to do wrong, just find someone to take the blame.
No, it can't be.
And when, by him being up there, he is speaking on behalf of the National Football League.
Right. It's almost like if you have like a recruiting coordinator for a college come up and say, look, you know, we're trying to do everything the right way. We're bringing these kids in. They love the campus, everything. And every now and then we got to grease the pockets of these kids. Like, it's everybody kind of knows it happens. You don't talk about it in public where people can see it. This is a peek behind the curtain a little bit of the National Football League to me. I think that goes on. I think that in locker rooms across this league that veterans are telling young players, look, you're going to go out and get in trouble. Make sure you got somebody that can take the blame for it. Make sure it doesn't fall on you, because if it falls on you, it falls on us. And that kind of thing is not acceptable in this locker room. That can't be said in an assembly where NFL.com is posting it where anybody can go watch it. It's a ridiculous thing for Chris Carter to say publicly. It's not an idea that I love it being around the NFL. I think it's there. I think it's a reality of the NFL.
Just think about any other person. Think of Gus Bradley gave that speech. If he came on, not even a speech. Think if he came on the radio and talked about doing the right thing. But look, in the end, we know they're not all going to do the right thing.
Right.
So we told them, just make sure you don't get caught, or if you do get caught, you got a guy who's willing to take the rap for you. You'll bail him out later and slide him a few extra
bucks.
You
don't even acknowledge that. You just tell him to do the right thing.
I mean, what would happen to Gus Bradley if you said? They'd probably be out of a job, right? I mean, quite frankly, he'd probably be out of a job if that were his public point of view on this whole thing. I don't care if Chris Carter talked for 10 hours. He got up there and made those kind of comments in that kind of setting. I think he's an idiot, quite frankly. I mean, to do it. And, you know, the NFL, though, may even be worse by the fact that someone confronted him afterwards, and they still posted this video and left it up there for a year, and now they say, well, that doesn't reflect our opinion, da-da-da-da-da.
Whatever.
And we disagree. But you put it out there.
Yeah.
And you left it there, and that just goes to show you nobody's watching these things on NFL.com,
right?
Because it hasn't been brought to anyone's attention.
Well, sure. Look, the NFL isn't a clean place, right? Like, there are things that go on behind closed doors that, like any business, any company, especially athletics, you just don't want to open the door to everything that's going on. Right? We all kind of know there's some dark stuff that goes on behind closed doors in the National Football League. You don't open it up and let everybody kind of get a glimpse of it the way that Chris Carter did. You just don't do that. You focus on the positives. And again, if you want to have a one-on-one conversation with a guy, that's different. And that stays between you two guys. I wish those conversations didn't have to happen, but they do.
All right, we got a break. We'll come back, take more of your calls on this if you want to weigh in. 641-1010. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, coming up on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here at Jaguars Today, we'll hear more from Gus Bradley. Speaking yesterday, chance to reflect on how the team played after watching some of the film, Tony. We'll get comments on the pass rush, on the O-line play, converting short yardage, drop passes. All those things will be addressed by Gus. That's coming up, but a lot of people want to weigh in on this Chris Carter story that we mentioned, talked about in the last segment. So let's get a few calls in on that as well. And I believe we'll go to Greg next up here at 641-1010. Hi, Greg.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. What's up? Turn your radio down, please. Thank you.
Tough on Chris Carter. But,
yeah,
you know, y'all taking it out of context. Because we can look at Alton Smith. Man, if you ain't, these cats ain't going to do right, man. These young cats, they young.
And so if you got a kid, let me ask you, Greg, if you got a kid, is your message to your kid, do better, or is it to keep screwing up and find somebody to take the blame?
No, we're not saying that, and that ain't what he's saying.
Sure we are. He's talking to 21-year-old kids and giving them some life advice as a Hall of Fame receiver.
But you looked at the beginning of his conversation, and then you take the end of it. But he said, if you're not going to do right, if you're not, if you got, it's just like if you got somebody in school, they knuckleheads. I mean, the teacher's just saying, man, this cat still ain't gonna do right, you know?
And so the message should be then, if you're not going to do right, just find a way to cover it up. That's what you're saying. No,
the message is that, if I got a posse and I'm riding deep like that in a posse, I shouldn't be the one to take the blame.
How about this? How about get rid of the posse? How about get rid of the posse, Greg?
At 21,
all right, thank you, Greg. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Greg. I just do not understand this. I just don't understand. He said, hey, do all the right things, but if you're not going to do the right things, cover it up. That's what he said.
That's what he said.
Okay, that is what he said.
He can't say that. I think it's a reality of life in the NFL. That doesn't mean that somebody representing the league can go into a room with 21-year-old kids and tell them that. Whether it's real or not doesn't matter.
What does that do to the effectiveness of the last 58 minutes of what you told him? Do right, do right, do right. All right, but we know in the end, come on, not all of you got to do right.
Right.
So just kind of, come on, wink, wink, nod, nod. You can ignore what I just said for the last hour. Just find a fall guy. I mean, he just came it out at the end. You know what? If you don't want to do right, okay, just make sure you find a fall guy. That's what he told them.
That's what he told them. And I don't think you or I, Mike, are saying that that's not reality in the league.
I want to know what Chris Carter's done that other people have taken the fall for, because clearly he was speaking from experience.
Sure. Look, there are guys in the league who aren't going to clean up their act, that are going to go around and do whatever they're going to do. It's a reality of the National Football League. This happens in the NFL. What can't happen is a guy representing the league, talking to guys coming into the league, basically say, we want you to do the right thing. If you're not going to do the right thing, here's how to get around being the wrong guy. Right? Here's how to get around being the guy we just talked about we want you to be for the last hour. If you're not going to be that guy, you're still going to choose that, just find somebody to take the blame for it. Whether it's real or not has no bearing on this.
I think we're going to Ronald next up here on the phones. Hi, Ronald. How are you?
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up?
Hey, just kind of indulge me a little bit. You're right. He probably shouldn't have said it, because just because it's real doesn't mean you say it. But isn't that kind of akin to when they say, you know, if you guys going to go out and drink and be drunk, find a designated driver, because you're going to be above the limit. Find you somebody to drive the vehicle, because
finding someone to drive the vehicle is a good thing that avoids you from doing something illegal. He's saying if you do something illegal, find someone to take the blame and don't take responsibility for it.
He's saying if you drive drunk and you're the guy who's driving, make sure there's somebody else in the car that's going to say he was the one who was driving. That's what Chris Carter told them to do. Not get the designated driver. Whether I crash the car or not, you're the guy that was driving.
Right. Get a designated driver. It's great advice. That's phenomenal advice. Or so is, don't do things that will put you in this position.
Right.
That's great advice.
Okay, I get that. You shouldn't do certain things, but it's kind of like political correctness. I mean, that's what Donald Trump is getting all these ratings about, because he's not being politically correct. Chris Carter was not being politically correct.
He was not being correct, period. Okay, I'm
shouldn't
sorry. If you're telling me that it's good advice, who's it good advice to? Criminals. I don't care if criminals get good advice. I want them to pay. It's terrible advice to me, because it enables the person who's doing the wrong thing to continue to do the wrong thing. And that's why you continue to see these guys, the recidivism, over and over and over, because they get coddled the whole freaking life. It is not good advice. It is terrible. It may be good for that guy, but I don't want to coddle a criminal. It's bad for the rest of us. This nut knucklehead who wants to get behind the wheel drunk is going to get out there again, or whatever, or roll with the illegal gun, or whatever he's doing that he has to find a fall guy for. This is not good advice. This is terrible advice. This is good advice in the sense of Better Call Saul is giving advice to his scheming clients to stay out of prison. It's good advice to them. It's not pretty good for the rest of society at large. It's terrible advice. What are people talking about? Unbelievable. Who's next? Joe the cabbie. Seriously, yes. Joe the cabbie. Go ahead.
Joe Cab, this is a good Jaguar Monday. I'm saying that the advice that Chris Carter gave, I don't understand. I would want to know, would you give that same advice to your own child? And I don't think he would do that. In the love of your child, you would never give your child advice. Do something wrong and let somebody take the blame for it. I'm not for it. I think that was ridiculous. And maybe if it was out of context, we missed the punch of the joke, but however it go, I wouldn't give that advice to my own child.
All right, thank you. Look, I
would hope nobody listening would.
Go watch it. What's out of context about it? I don't care if you said 1,000 times, do the right thing, do the right thing. You can say it for every day for a million years. And at the end, you go, but if you're not going to do the right thing, if you're just going to ignore the good advice, here's how to get out of getting paying any penalty for the wrong things you do. I don't see how that's out of context. This is Chris Carter said it. The media. You media. Oh, take it out of context. Are you kidding me? Grow up, people.
No, look. I thought when I saw the headline yesterday, Mike, when this whole thing was blowing up, I was like, certainly he's talking to the rookie symposium. He kind of throws it as like an offhand comment, right? Like, that was what I thought it would have to be when I just saw the headline, because nobody's going to go to the rookie symposium and say, if you're going to get out of trouble, if you're going to be a troublemaker, just have somebody as the fall guy in your crew. Like, I could see it as kind of a throwaway joke, and it would still, a big deal would be being made of it, even if it was that kind of thing, where he's just throwing it out there and letting the room laugh a little bit. Everyone would still be like, ah, you can't say that kind of thing to these guys in that room.
2 minutes about it.
He was serious. Like, he was having a serious discussion with guys that are going into the National Football League about, well, if you decide you're not going to be the good guy that we all want you to be, if you're not going to protect the shield, if you're not going to protect yourself, here's the way to get around doing whatever the heck you want to do, right? It's just to have somebody in your crew that when things go bad, he knows he's the fall guy and you're going to go bail him out of jail.
Let's get Tony up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Tony.
What's going on, man? You know, I'd like to comment. Good morning, Mike and Tony, man. I just want to tell y'all, I enjoyed the show, first time caller. But I swear, that got to be the stupidest thing that Chris Carter could have ever seen ever in his life. I'd have been to prison.
Thank you, Tony. We appreciate the sentiment overall, if not the words used to express it. All right, let's go to Mike to wrap up thoughts on this, and we'll move on, getting back to Gus Bradley, what he had to say yesterday. What's up, Mike? How are you? I'm sorry, Jeff. My bad. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I can't believe that you are getting calls supporting Chris Carter's comments there at the end. I mean, he may have had a brain fart. He may have done, you know, sometimes your mouth runs and maybe you feel like you're connecting with these young guys and you say something and, you know, but to be a caller at home listening to your show and then call in and defend that is idiotic.
Yeah. I don't get it either. Jeff, thanks for the call. Tyler, we can hear you in our ear. So, if you could stop doing that. If you want to make the case that as Tony, I think you were saying earlier, maybe he said it, maybe he kind of was half joking, then he couldn't stop himself and he kept going and it became, he brought Teddy Bridgewater up and used it. He said, Teddy, you're down in Miami. Like, as if to say,
right.
Everybody in Miami rolls with a crew and you're all up to no good, shady stuff. You got a guy. And he even said, Teddy, you got a guy, right? He'll take the fall
it's
for you, right?
It's continuing, like, that kind of thing is continuing to throw off whatever you said for 56 minutes, right? It's like, we want you to be good. This is how you be good. Do all these things. And then you bring up one of the most prominent rookies in that class and you say, you roll in Miami, right? Like, it's just unavoidable to be a complete idiot in this league, right? We know you're all going to be stupid. So when you're all stupid, this is what you need to do within your crews. It completely disregards anything you said before that. It's idiocy for Chris Carter to have said what he said. I'm curious to see how ESPN's going to handle it.
All right, let's get Keith in, and we're going to put a cap on this because I don't want it to overrun the rest of the time. We want to do definitely we're going to hear from Gus coming up. So go ahead, Keith.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'll tell you what, years ago in Sports Illustrated, they were talking about Larry Sanders and how he fought a lot of demons and then he found Christ. And one of the people that saved him was Chris Carter, because Chris Carter is, like, well-known as a man of God. So to hear that on for what he told those people kind of just set all that back, like decades. I mean, that's just not good.
No, it's not. Look, let's also be clear. Chris Carter may have done many wonderful things in counseling people over the years that have been very helpful and very on point. Yeah, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater and say that Chris Carter now is, you know, unfit to breathe the same air that we do. And I know I'm going with a little hyperbole here, but you get the point I'm trying to make. I'm sure he has. Maybe he did help Larry Sanders. And, you know, this whole man of God thing, don't judge, you know, people of faith by the missteps of some high-profile people that profess to be people of faith, and we've
certainly
seen it
not, no.
from televangelists falling back in the 80s all the way through Josh Duggar today, Tony, and on we go. Does that mean you ignore every other thing that comes out of his mouth? That's your prerogative if you do. And it certainly, I think, this is going to cause certain people to look at Chris Carter in a different way from this point forward. It was an incredibly dumb thing to do. It's inconceivable to me that he didn't realize how dumb it was, and he claims only upon viewing it yesterday, going back seeing what all the fuss was about, that he then realized how wrong he was to make that comment, which is, to me, completely self-serving. I'm hoping I still have a job at ESPN coming
Monday. Yeah, that's ESPN came down with a hammer, and Chris said, oh, I'll apologize.
Yes, I will now apologize and tell you how wrong. At least I'll say this. He didn't claim it was taken out of context. Chris Carter did, and Chris Carter said, I gave some damn bad advice is what I did, and I'm embarrassed at what I said last year. I should have never said anything like that. Now, you may say he's just saying that to protect his job, and he's saying what he thinks they want to hear, and that may be the case, but I'd rather hear that than it was taken out of context. There was nothing taken out of context.
No.
It's plain to see the
context
whole thing.
The context is there.
The context is all there. do right. But if you're not going to do right, make sure you got a
and we know some of you won't
to escape right. through. All right? And we'll blame it on somebody else. All right.
Warren and Chris is where you get answers.
You do get answers there. You might not
a little
like
surprising
them.
It was Chris and not Warren.
Right?
Saying something this stupid. Although Warren, with all the trouble he's gotten into in his life, I don't think he's learned that. He's probably taking notes from Chris Carter. He's like, oh, really?
He was up there, too. Warren Sapp was up there. If you watch the whole thing play out, and he's like, because the first question I think Devontae Freeman asked him was, if you could have one day back, what would you do? Chris Carter said the one day he would have back in his career is the day Buddy Ryan cut him. Not, I wouldn't have stopped the behavior that caused me to get cut.
Right.
It was, I wouldn't have Buddy Ryan cut me from the Philadelphia Eagles. And he almost teared up. At least for Sapp, I don't think it was genuine, but Sapp said, going back, I wish I could have stopped the behavior that caused me to fail a drug test, that caused me to slide in the draft, and this whole 9 yards. He goes, I learned a hard lesson that day. Oh, did you, Warren?
Yeah.
Did you learn a lesson that day?
He's learned it a couple times since.
Yes, he has. All right. It's being reinforced. All right, moving along, we'll hear from Gus Bradley coming back on the O-line, drop passes, the pass rush or lack thereof, and more, and take a look at some of the fan feedback spotlight as well. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Spirited debate on the program. We love a good spirited debate
sure.
on the program. And a couple, just to close the door on this, a couple on the text line, Tony, from a listener who calls himself American Indigo. Okay? Two long texts here. Let me read them to you. Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Don't mention the bad stuff, only the positive, ? Sounds like you should have asked for a job at Penn State back in the day. I'm not saying Carter was right in how he handled it, but he dropped a bit of real knowledge on how to protect themselves and the ever-precious shield. This is the real world, fellas. He addressed the sad mentality of a lot of poor youths and with incredible ability. That was the first text.
And did I or did I not say that? This was a peek behind the curtain in what happens in NFL circles. It shouldn't happen.
And then it was followed up by this. You guys don't mind a criminal if you can get him on the cheap and he can help your team. Just last week we were debating if Aldon Smith was a good idea. We can't talk out of both sides of our mouths. I'm totally down with blacklisting all of the criminal types. Good, because you didn't hear us advocating for Aldon Smith. Just because you hear it on this station, when you say we were discussing, we is very specific when you're calling or texting this show to what we actually say.
Yeah.
And you didn't hear us ever advocating for Aldon Smith to join his football team. In fact, neither one of us think he'll play this year. And, not to make this a whole personal diatribe, but my cousin just died due to the actions of a drunk driver. 29 years old, left behind a 2-year-old baby. This was last Thursday night. If you think I give a crap about anybody who gets behind the wheel with an ounce of alcohol in their body, and if any of them were blacklisted from the NFL, or I would advocate for Aldon Smith to come to this football team,
right?
You're freaking out of your mind, okay? And you don't listen, and you lump my opinion in and Tony's opinion in with other opinions you hear. And I can't speak for anybody else because I don't know what anybody else feels about Aldon Smith. But you're freaking out of your mind if you think that that's the way I feel about that situation. Okay, there goes the door. Apparently I've raised the volume a little high today. Okay? Let's get to a couple of Gus Bradley cuts, shall we? Tony, starting with, this was yesterday, Gus, talking about the pass rush and what he's seen through two preseason games.
One of the things we look at is just opportunities. You know, we had, I think it was 5 hits, a couple hurries. They did get rid of the ball. You know, sometimes we time it, see, you know, for expectations, you know, in our room, what we expect. And a lot of the balls were released before 2.8 seconds, the majority of them. We kind of knew that a little bit from playing the Giants last year, that they did have a tendency to get rid of the ball quickly. We talked to our players about getting their hands up more, and batted balls. You saw that. I think we had 4 batted balls with the defensive line. You know, so we wanted to take advantage of that, a little bit of an emphasis with the D-line. So even though the sacks weren't there, did see some disruptive plays from them. But, you know, the affecting the quarterback, sack caused fumble. You know, we had one with Chad. And, you know, it can really determine the outcome of a game. So I think Branch had one disruption on the day, you know, out of that Leo spot. But just a lot of quick game. And, you know, we're going to see that. So we've got to be able to play good, tight coverage when those things happen.
And they did have some of those occasions when they were certainly getting rid of the ball quickly. But just, you know, eyeball test indicates to me, still needs to get more pressure.
Sure. You want to hit him every now and then. I can't remember Eli Manning getting touched in that game by anybody in a Jaguars uniform. Saturday night, Gus Bradley switching to the other side of the ball, talking about the offensive line, and he specifically talks about Luke Jokel.
Luke played better, and I'll tell you where he did. I thought he played better versus power. You know, and I think teams are trying to go, you know, they'll use speed, and they'll use power and speed to power. But where he showed up last night, I thought where he improved was versus the power. So that was a good sign. And I thought he just played overall. He got better. And then the whole offensive line, I thought Beatles had a solid game again. Wiz a solid game. You know, I think overall very good in protections. Did give up a sack, you know, at that first group. But, you know, there's some things we can continue to work on. I think we can, our second level blocking, up front with our offensive line, I think it can be improved. And with that, our running game will become even better.
You know, the best thing about Jokel was the other night? You didn't notice him very much, right?
No. Now,
certainly not for anything glaringly negative. Had the hold, but that was kind of it was borderline.
It was a soft hold.
Yeah, I mean, look, guys are going to have, they're not going to have perfect games. They're not going to be, you know, never have a holding penalty. But I think overall, you know, pretty happy, cautiously optimistic about the way the offensive line is trending. And finally, from Gus Bradley, was asked about drop passes versus New York after we saw some the week before, and how concerning is that?
Yeah, they did. I think, Ryan, we had 6 drops, you know, so you're right. Some opportunities, you know, with the receivers that we missed on, and we got to continue to clean that up, you know, and plays that, you know, nothing challenging either, things they make every day in the practice field. So, you know, we'll all take responsibility. Receivers got to catch them. We can be more accurate, you know, on our throws. That will help out. But, you know, we just keep getting better and better at it is our hopes. But surely we recognize it that, you know, we got to clean up those drops.
There you go. A little bit from Gus Bradley yesterday. You'll hear more from him, of course, throughout the course of the day. Jaguars Monday tonight, as well as we get you ready all week long for Detroit coming in. Tony, the question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships asked today, biggest positive, biggest negative takeaway from preseason game number 2. What do we get?
From Black Dog Express, positive, love Alu Alu as the fullback. Negative, I lose my mind the way the DBs don't play the ball, missing easy interceptions. From Cristiano, positive, no hype, but Blake was still good. Negative, I still don't want to talk about negatives. From Demetrius, positive, the secondary versus OBJ / Craig Loston's performance. Negative, drops / red zone scoring. From Dusty Duval, Blake's progress, negative, where's the pass rush? Is the answer Clemens? I don't believe so. From Jason, positive starting offense moving the ball, but negative not ending the drives with a touchdown from Joey. The positive, the offense moved the ball. Negative, they didn't score any touchdowns. Hashtag no more excuses. Hashtag just score touchdowns. Damn it. From Eric, is the running game positive? Is the running game and O-line development negative? Has to be the number of injuries. Hashtag hold them out. From Daniel, positive third down run conversions for first down. Negative defense run stopping. From Paolo, we got positive with seeing the offense moving the ball consistently. Negative was the zero pass rush. And from Irish Jaguar, positive the running game looking decent. Negative was the lack of pass rush. He says, P.S. I'm back. For all those who don't know, Irish Jag got married last week, so he's back after taking a week hiatus, I guess, from the show. So welcome back, and everybody out there on Twitter and Jaguars Nation, say a happy honeymoon coming to Irish Jaguar.
Congrats to him. Yeah. Condolences to his bride. That's the way I would like.
Absolutely.
Yes. Is that it?
That's good.
There
that's
go.
It.
I got a bunch of them on Facebook here and weighed in on a lot of the same things. This one I found amusing. Josh Wiggins said positive depth at the kicker position we've been building here, and negative 2 weeks, no touchdowns, at least no touchdown passes from the first-team offense. Certainly no touchdowns at all this week. But, hey, look, there's a lot of work to do. Fortunately, they've got a little bit of time to get it done as they move on towards the season. And you look at the Carolina Panthers, Tony, Frank Alexander, one of the guys in their pass rush rotation, mm-hmm. out for the year with an Achilles injury, another injury they suffered. And Carolina's getting pretty beat up right now. And that game's less than 3 weeks away with the Jaguars opening up season. Can you believe that? 20 days away from the start of the year.
I know.
The real thing, man. And then we can put all this nonsense behind us and move on and hopefully talk about a bunch of Jaguar victories on the field today. It's fun. It's good to get the juices flowing today. We appreciate the calls on both sides. The opinion.
We got him to shut the door.
I vehemently disagree with those saying it was taken out of context or cut Carter a break on this one, and we did get him to shut the door.
Yeah, but I think
the volume
you put
was
it
rising
most concisely, and really the way to sum it all up, I think, for the two of us is the NFL shouldn't be up there trying to enable criminal activity. It can't be up there doing that kind of thing, and Chris Carter saying get a fall guy is doing exactly that.
That's pretty much what it comes down to.
You can't have that at an official league event. I don't disagree with people who say it's a reality in the NFL. I know that there are probably teams and players on teams that are talking to teammates and their players saying, look, if you're going to go out and be stupid, then you need to protect yourself, right? I don't doubt that that kind of thing goes on. It can't be an official NFL stance.
The message needs to be, for you guys that are going to continue to be knuckleheads, you know what? I'm not going to get through to all of you, but you're not going to be long for this league.
Right.
That needs to be the
right
message.
Tell them they're not going to be around.
Right.
If you're going to do these kinds of things, you don't get to play in this league if you do those kinds of things. Even if it's not reality that they don't get to play in this league, at least try to scare them a little bit while they're coming into the league, and you may be able to impact somebody in that room as opposed to, well, you're going to be an idiot anyway, so just have the guy that'll say it's his weed, it's his gun, he was the one driving whatever in your crew, and you'll go bail him out of jail. You can't say that.
Hey, you want a gun? Get it legally. I have it registered. I have no problems. I'm a big Second Amendment guy. Look, you want to have an arsenal. As long as you're a law-abiding citizen, go have at it. And I'd be a hypocrite to think otherwise. Our Monday sponsor is Wild West Guns and Gold, for goodness sakes. And I have no issue with what they do. I have no issue with guns, gun culture. As long as it's not criminals with the guns, as long as you're not, you know, don't have it unregistered, don't carry a concealed weapon if you don't have a concealed permit, just abide by the law. I got plenty of friends with oodles of guns, and I got no issue with any of them. So have at it and do your thing. Just let's all agree to do it legally as much as we possibly can. And if you can't do it legally, I hope they catch you.
Right. Okay? And at least have the public stance of the NFL be do it legally.